And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hello, and welcome to another live edition of the Metrospective. I'm Ted Berg, joined in this live chat room by one of the Athletics Mets beat writers, Tim Britton. Tim, just give me all of the injury updates.
All of the injury updates. You know, Will Salmon is with the team in Atlanta, and he had to write, I think, four different things on Monday and Tuesday. So you know about Luis Guillorme out for 3 to 4 weeks, perhaps longer with the groin issue that he suffered on Sunday. Eduardo Escobar is on the injured list. He's out with a left oblique issue that he tried to come back from but struggled with. So that, you know, should be shorter than Guillorme's, but you never know. Oblique flinger, as we talked about on the podcast. Carlos Carrasco is out for 3 to 4 weeks. That was a hamstring strain, I believe. I'm getting confused with them. And then Taiwan Walker left his last start with back spasms on Tuesday. The hope is that he would be ready to start on Sunday, but you're not sure about that because, you know, the Mets were already going to need a sixth starter. If all their starters were healthy, they were going to need a sixth starter in David Peterson on Saturday for the doubleheader against Philadelphia. Now they need, a starter to replace Carrasco for that set for the other game on Saturday. You would presume that would be Trevor Williams. And if Walker can't go, they need another starter on Sunday. And that's where you don't really know who it is. That's when you get a bit more up in the air. It's Jose Buto in AAA, a guy who is on the 40-man roster, recently got called up to AAA, has an awesome changeup, but that would be a relatively quick rise for him. You know, Tylor McGill and Joey Lucchesi, your other starting depth in the organization, they are not ready to pitch in a major league game on Sunday. So I don't know if you go bullpen game in that spot. I think you just really hope Taiwan Walker is ready to make that start.
And Buto, I'm looking at his stats now. Like, he was solid in AA before his promotion, at one start in AAA so far. It's not like this guy is blazing his way. Like, there's a lot of promise from what I understand. And his rate stats have been great throughout his minor league career, but it's not like this guy blazed his way through the minors and earned a call.
Right. I mean, he's not knocking the door down as it was. The changeup is really good. He's thrown harder this year. I think there's some thought that, you know, he could be a relief option relatively soon. But, the ceiling on Jose Buto is probably a number three or four starter, if that. So it's not someone where you put him in the rotation, you expect him to be in there the rest of the season.
On the other hand, and, like, I guess, you know, there's, you know, we've been talking about the team's depth the entire year. And a spate of injuries like this is never a good thing. With the Mets, you do come to expect it a little bit. And if there is a silver lining here, I think for fans, and maybe not for the Mets because they seemed hesitant, but it's that Brett Beatty is now with the Major League team. We saw him. We're speaking, if you're listening live, you know this, but if you're listening on recording, we're speaking on Thursday afternoon. On Wednesday night, Beatty hit a home run in his first major league game. What can we reasonably expect out of him? Is it the moon?
You expect a home run every night from Beatty.
Yes. He's established this.
Did his family enjoy the home run? It seemed like they enjoyed the home run.
They did.
Those are always, like, the most fun highlights to see is just family going nuts in the stands the way Beatty's did. On Wednesday night, you know, the question about calling him up was not an offensive question. It was not a question about his bat. It's probably the same with Mark Vientos and Francisco Alvarez as well. You know, Vientos has had excellent numbers at AAA basically since the start of May. Alvarez has, the batting average isn't great in AAA. It might still be below 200, or it was the last time I checked. The on-base and slugging are really good, and he's picked it up since the slow start. Beatty is only at AAA for six games and was cruising there, was doing really well immediately upon promotion there, and had been having a really nice season in AA. The question is really, like, how could you trust any of them defensively at the position you needed them at? Alvarez at catcher, Vientos and Beatty at third, and clearly the Mets made the decision that they trust Beatty a little bit more defensively at third. That goes along with, that aligns with what we've heard from scouts for a little while now, probably 2 years, basically. And, you know, Vientos is more of an option against left-handed pitching. Beatty is better against right-handed pitching. I'll be interested, you know, we're recording this before Thursday night's game, before Thursday night's lineup is out, whether Beatty is in there against Max Fried or whether they go with Devin Marrero. You know, the way this broke down for the Mets was essentially Marrero was called up to replace Guillorme, and Marrero's a guy who's had some success against lefties in the major leagues. I covered him in 2017 when he was at the Red Sox and was basically a platoon third baseman for them. He started against lefties when they had Rafael Devers there, and he actually started a playoff game against Houston that year. His numbers against lefties have not been especially good since then. But you needed someone who could play shortstop or second base. You needed an infielder who's capable of multiple positions. Marrero gives them that. And then Beatty was to replace Escobar and to be what I expect is the regular third baseman until the other guys are back.
You're not gonna call up Beatty and have him on the bench, right? Like that would be counterproductive. And I also think I understand, like, even if you're saying this guy's not fully polished, ready major league prospect, I refuse to believe he's not better than Devin Marrero on a day-to-day basis. So there's none to knock Marrero for doing what he can do. But if you're thinking about who's going to be your regular, what Brett Beatty can bring you is more than what Devin Marrero can bring you.
Right, because what you're talking about with Marrero is, you know, a guy who wasn't in your organization at the start of the year. You know, it's not like you're at your backup third. It's not like this is Guillorme. You're deciding between Beatty and Guillorme. The guy who was your opening day. You're talking about a guy who was fifth or sixth on the depth chart just a couple days ago, you know?
And, like, even with Escobar, I think, you know, like, and Escobar's not having a great year, but I think it's easy to make the case, like, no, like, let's not force Beatty up to replace this veteran who we kind of feel like will come around, who's still playing good defense, who's still, like, getting some big hits. That's fine. I had no beef with that. But once Escobar is on the DL and you need an everyday third baseman and you have this guy in AAA mashing the ball, like, let's not overthink this.
Right. And you know, it's the argument we made, or at least I made. I think you assented to it in July when McCann went down, that, you know, now's the time to give Francisco Alvarez a shot, because it's, you're going to play Tomas Nito a fair amount, but it's, you're choosing between Alvarez and Patrick Mazika. That's different than choosing between Alvarez and McCann or Alvarez and Nito. You're choosing between him and a backup. Decided not to go in that direction, which tells you what they feel about Alvarez's defense, that they don't think it's major league ready. And in this instance, with a little, and with an extra day there of cajoling, with an extra day of seeing what was going on with Escobar physically, they decided that Beatty was worth it, and it certainly paid off for them on Wednesday.
Howard B. is waiting in the queue to ask us a question. What is up, Howard?
Hey, how's it going, Tim? Good to finally speak with you. Appreciate the opportunity. Question is about Tyler McGill, because they clearly need another reliable arm in the bullpen. He's got the stuff. But what do you believe his role is going to be, given the starting staff may need somebody else in there? What do you think his role is going to be when he comes back in a couple of weeks?
Yeah, thanks for the question, Howard. It is good to talk to you finally. So with McGill, you know, I think it's funny. You want to say, like, oh, well, they need a starter now. Like, Rafael to be a starter. The timelines aren't going to work out that way. I think they're still going to have him be a reliever unless they get worse news on Carrasco and or Walker. That, you know, if one of those guys is going to be out beyond the point where McGill could come back as a starter and you need him to be in your rotation, then I think they're going to still focus his energies on coming back to the bullpen as soon as he can, you know, probably in the next, you know, early September, maybe, or first or second week of September, I think is basically the time frame on him, and then see what he can do out of there. You know, you've got, right now, they've got kind of a carousel of four right-handed setup relievers in front of Edwin Diaz. They've got Ottavino and Lugo. May and Gibbons have joined that group. know, Ottavino and Lugo have pitched the best there. Ottavino basically all season, Lugo especially of late. Givens has looked pretty good since that first outing. May, you know, had the hiccup obviously on Wednesday night. So, and, you know, a bullpen, you ride the hot hand as much as any other position, and especially that's true in October, and just giving themselves as many options as possible. To have McGill as another guy in that group, you know, you're probably going to carry 12 or 13 pitchers in the playoffs. That's an interesting question, whether you go with the extra one or not. But, you know, you have an 8 or 9-man bullpen. You want as many of those options to be as palatable as possible. And McGill could also, by that point, give you some length if you need it in an emergency. So I think, you know, I think there's a good chance, as long as he doesn't suffer a physical setback, that he's part of a postseason bullpen for the Mets.
I want to ask you a follow-up on that. I want to take more questions, but you tweeted something that was interesting, which is that the postseason schedule is out, and the Mets, as it stands now, would need a fifth starter, most likely. Does that change their accounting with, you know, how they play McGill, Peterson, Williams, et cetera, moving forward?
Well, you don't need a fifth starter. So the way it's set up, you know, the usual postseason setup is every day you travel, you have an off day. So
right.
In the series, you have off days between after game 2 and after game 4, which means that you can throw your game 1 or game 2 starter on regular rest for game 5. So if you want to, you know, let's say a guy who can go on 3 days rest, you can start him in, you know, in game 1 and game 4. Your game 2 starter can go in game 5 on regular rest. You only need 3 starters for the division series. We saw the Yankees in 2009 do that, if I remember correctly. And the Dodgers in 2015 when the Mets played them. They all saw Kershaw and Greinke twice each. The NLCS is the bigger issue. That's now you've only got a day off after game 2. You don't get the one after game 5. And so that you will play 5 straight days. And the question there is whether you go with your game 3 starter. Let's say that you have a 7-game NLCS. Do you pitch your game 3 starter on 3 days rest in game 7? Do you set up your rotation so that you have a specific pitcher going in game 3 to have that option? Or do you say, you know, our best chance is to carry a fifth starter. The Mets, you know, they have 5 good starters when they're all healthy. That could be a leg up for them over some other team. But also, you know, you're not getting DeGrom and Scherzer as much as possible. Under the old system, you could have those guys. You would definitely have those guys 4 times in a series and the chance, if you wanted to go a fifth in game 7. So, you know, it's a little bit complicated. I think the bigger issue is probably going to be the fatigue issue, especially if the seeding holds in the National League and you get a Mets, Dodgers, NLCS. You're going to be flying from New York after Game 5 on, I forget what day of the week it is, on a Friday night, and you're going to be playing Game 6 in Los Angeles on Saturday night. That's going to be, I think, the bigger issue in terms of fatigue for players, potentially for writers, I don't know. But it does play a little bit with who you're going to bring on your NLCS roster, at least. You know, if the Mets, say, deem their fifth starter, let's say it's Carrasco, that they don't think he's going to do anything out of the bullpen, he can still stay off the NLDS roster, but you would have to carry him on the CS roster.
It reeks of conspiracy. Michael B. has a question for us. Oh, no, Michael B. is no longer in the queue.
Michael?
Yes. So in regards to Jacob DeGrom, what's the timeline on stretching him out to, you know, I guess stretching him out and then if he's going to be capped at like 105 or 110 pitches in the postseason?
Yeah, good question, Michael. I was a little surprised his last start that it was only 6 innings and 70 some odd pitches. We've seen him be ultra efficient since his return, which has actually been the case for him since 2021. That he's been not only striking out everyone, but doing it in like 3 pitches. I think, you know, this next start will get him probably up to 7, you know, if he's available to go with 7th inning, to go 7 innings, to go up to probably 90 pitches. And then the start after that, I think you probably have the all shackles off where, you know, if he's carrying a shutout at 95 pitches after 8 innings, you can probably give him the 9th. You know, we'll see how they build up to that. But the goal here with DeGrom is to have him as healthy as possible for the month of October. You know, I don't know that even in October with any of the Mets pitchers we're going to be seeing pitch counts much above 110. I think Chris Bassitt's the only guy who's gone over that count so far this year in the regular season. So you're just not going to see those kinds of pitch counts, especially if they're thinking of using these guys on 3 days rest or out of the bullpen on their throw days. But DeGrom should be close to a full go probably in the next 2 weeks.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/theathletic. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
We've got some questions in the chat. One of them comes from Stephen M., who wants to know, do the Mets have to move Escobar, McCann, or Nito in the offseason to make room for Beatty, Vientos, and Alvarez in 23?
They don't have to. They can look into it for sure. You can see if the catcher is such a position of scarcity in the major leagues that, you know, if you wanted to move McCann and you'd have to pay down some of the salary you'd be due. I'm not sure if it is just the straight $20 million the last 2 years, or if it was structured in such a way that it was backloaded a little bit. But you'd pay that down a little bit to maybe $4 or $5 million a year if you wanted to move him to a team that needed a catcher to open up that spot for Alvarez. Also, you know, you've got enough room on your bench these days in the National League to carry a third catcher, especially one who would pinch hit or DH sometimes like Alvarez. So it wouldn't surprise me if they held on to McCann just because they deemed it worthwhile to have around in that instance. I don't know that you're handing Francisco Alvarez 110 starts at catcher in 2023. With Escobar, kind of the same thing. Probably depends on where they are with Guillorme as well. You know, Guillorme has been essentially an everyday player by this point in the season until this latest injury. And I don't know if you go into next season thinking he's your guy at third base most of the time or what you want to do with Beatty as an everyday player. You know, we're going to find out over the next several weeks, basically, the next couple of months, where they're going to be with those guys going into the offseason. You know, Vientos is interesting because, like we've talked about, the deal for Darren Ruff kind of blocks at least one role for him, which is like the backup first baseman who DHs against left-handers. They don't have to pick up Ruff's club option for next year. And if they don't do that, then you've got Vientos more of an obvious role for him as at least the short side of a platoon with Vogel back at DH, and then the capability of playing some third, maybe some first. Maybe they revisit the corner outfield with him, but that's something that they've gotten away from a little bit this year to this point.
We have a question in the chat that I believe I can answer. I think I've got this one. Dan P. wants to know, what happens when Guillorme and Escobar come back if Beatty has run away with the third base job by then? I believe what happens is they play less, right? Like if it's, and you know, Guillorme is still going to find the field plenty of times because of his versatility, but correct me if I'm wrong, these guys aren't going to be back. I mean, certainly Escobar is not going to be back before rosters expand, so it's not going to be an issue of a roster crunch. Eduardo Escobar hasn't had a great season. He's a veteran player. I'm sure he'd understand. He's got some positional versatility. Like, that doesn't seem like much of a problem. If Beatty's run away with the third base job, that's good. That's a net positive.
Yeah, and, the question here is, what does running away with the third base job, what constitutes running away with the job?
You know, David Wright, 2004.
Right.
But I'm serious. Like, because that was a great quarter season or whatever he had, but it's not like an unreasonable, or Michael Conforto in 2015, right? Like, a guy comes up and just plays really well.
Right. You know, Mike Jacobs in 2005. If he does that, yeah, he's going to be there. But, you know, if he hits.
That's brutal. I'm sorry. Like, I threw out David Wright and Michael Conforto, and you came back with Mike Jacobs.
Well, let's see. David Wright's OPS plus, he had 69 games. It was 118. Mike Jacobs in his he had like 11 home runs in like 3 weeks.
Oh, he was unbelievable. He was unbelievable, and it made him a part of the trade for Delgado, right? But we're talking 80. Careers here. What's that?
His OPS plus in 30 games was 180 in 2005.
Would accept that. I would take that. I'm just talking in terms of like omens for the guy. We want more than 30 games out of Brett Beatty here.
Yeah, but you're not going to have that by the time you're making this decision with Guillorme and Escobar this season. So, you know, and I think the tougher decision is Beatty's hitting .240 with a .310 on base percentage and pop, which your lineup needs. And Guillorme is a guy who gives you a better average, a better on base percentage, but not the slug and better defense. How do you make that decision? I think there's still a role for Escobar, maybe against lefties. Again, depending on how Beatty does against lefties, he scalded a ball off Tyler Matzik on Wednesday night. He's got good numbers against him in the minor leagues. You believe he'll hit lefties long term, but you don't know right off the bat what he's going to be with that. And, you know, your team trying to win now, if Escobar is 5% better than Brett Beatty against lefties, you're going to play Escobar. With Guillorme, you know, there's certainly a role for him as a defensive replacement, but I think it becomes tougher if, you know, Beatty's numbers are a little bit worse than what Guillorme's have been this season, but there's more promise there, and he maybe fits your lineup better as providing something that the lineup doesn't have otherwise. That's when that decision gets a little more difficult, and where, quite honestly, like, I'd go with Beatty and the power potential there, knowing that you've got a fallback in Guillorme in the case it doesn't work out, and, you know, you're in game four of a playoff series, and Brett Beatty is 0-20 in October with 12 strikeouts, then you go with Guillorme as your starter there.
You've got only negative vibes for Brett Beatty. What did he do to you? What did he do?
I'm just saying. You said he's going to get 50 games
I'm
to
saying,
be dead.
Go on.
He's got 30 games, and if he hits 11 home runs like Mike Jacobs, then this isn't a conversation. If it's something that's more normal for a prospect to come up and hit, then the decision becomes more difficult because he's not replacing a zero offensively for you. Because Guillorme has been a very good player for them so far this season.
Yeah, and Guillorme rules. I just think that there's going to be plenty of playing time for him because you can play him everywhere, and like, it just makes you that much deeper. I'd also point out, like, it's different than what I mentioned earlier about calling up Beatty to ride the bench now. Having Beatty sit down for a few games in September is at a time when the AAA season's over anyway, right? So it's not like you're like costing him any sort of development or anything like that, nor would a few days really change anything long-term. I feel like, you know, it's good to have a guy like that around, even if he's not going to be in your postseason roster, just to, you know, like, they talk about that all the time, like, just come get a taste, right? Like, and Alvarez too, like, I feel like I'm pulling for them to make those calls, and I know they're going to need pitchers, and they might have like more immediate concerns to address with the roster expansion. But I love the idea of giving the prospect a taste.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a question of whether he's on the active roster with the team in September. I think it's just, you know, it's game one of a playoff series and you're facing Zach Wheeler in Philadelphia. Who's your starting third baseman? Does Brett Beatty do enough to be that guy? Or is it with Guillorme? You know, I think that's the question that we don't know the answer to, and we're going to have 6 or 7 weeks here to find out.
I want to know right now.
basically all sports are just trying to find information before it's true or not. Like, just trying to find out. We know it's going to happen eventually, but we want to talk about what might happen before with some certainty.
Mark N. wants to know why Perez and not Mazzica.
That is an interesting question. I thought it surprised me a little bit that they did not play Mazzica much at all when McCann was out. Nito played basically every game there. I think it was, you know, something like 12 starts to 2 for Mazzica. You know, Mazzica, the pitchers have had a decent ERA with him. Perez is a guy that you trust a little bit more defensively than Mazzica. He's got that reputation, at least.
Did you see that throw? I mean, that was one of like the most. That's one of the best throws you'll ever see from a catcher. Just like how on the money he was throwing. I forget who he threw at.
Yeah, I mean, he's there's a reason he's still in the league as a guy who's got one of the worst OPSs of anyone in the last decade. And it's because he's an excellent defensive catcher. They've had excellent defensive catching all year. And the bump that Mazzica might give you offensively over Perez is pretty minimal at this point. I think that's probably what they're thinking. But, you know, when they did call up, it's like, oh, it's Perez, not Mazzica. I had the same initial idea as Mark there.
Stephen M. wants to know, is John Daniels now or David Stern still on the radar for a front office role next year? As if you only follow the Mets, you might have missed that John Daniels, the longtime GM of the Texas Rangers, who grew up a Mets fan, that's right, right? He also grew up a Mets fan?
Yeah.
So yeah. Daniels has been relieved of duty by the Rangers, will be available this offseason.
Yeah, Daniels and Stern both growing up in New York as Mets fans. And obviously have long-term and pretty good major league experience in front offices. You know, Daniels is freely available. I can imagine him coming on in an assistant GM capacity if that interests him. If that interests Billy Epler in the Mets front office, that's a role that he could be available for. Stearns is obviously under contract with the Brewers through the end of this season, and the reporting suggests that the Brewers have to advance in the playoffs. I think at least to the League Championship Series for Stearns to be available to opt out of his contract, although that's not certain. It would create a hilarious Mets Brewers division series situation. Everything I've heard is that the Mets are interested in David Stearns being their president of baseball operations, that has never wavered. David Stearns is interested in being the Mets president of baseball operations. And until either he signs a long-term extension with the Brewers, until the Mets promote someone else to president of baseball ops, until he takes the job and it's finally consummated, there's going to be those rumors, you know, that we reported at The Athletic last November that, you know, even when the Mets had moved off of hiring a president of baseball ops, even after the Brewers had denied them permission, not only on Stearns, but on Matt Arnold as well, that the Mets still retained interest in Stearns and were going to go after him whenever he was next available for them to pursue. So, I think until there's like concrete evidence that it's not going to happen, I'm going to believe that David Stearns is on the Mets radar.
It makes you think, like, if you think about that possibility of the very odd Mets Brewers NLCS, which is on the table. But then, so say that happens and the Mets win and they win the World Series, right? Then like, what? How does it feel if you're Billy Epler and they hire the guy you just beat?
A bit crummy, you know, and maybe that change, you know, maybe that is enough to change the Mets' minds. But I know, you know, from the reporting last offseason that Epler and Stearns get along pretty well, that they know each other reasonably well, that, you know, Epler was given a pretty long-term contract as a general manager, even after it seemed like he was not the Mets' top choice in that offseason pursuit, and that, you know, maybe part of that is, you know, if this other guy is available, would you be comfortable being the number two to him in the front office, and he was okay with that. you know, maybe that changes over the course of a World Series winning first season where you made a lot of moves. But, you know, that was, that always seemed like, to me at least, it seemed like Epler took that job with the idea that, you know what, they still might want to hire a president of baseball ops outside, and it's probably David Stearns is at the top of their list.
We'll take one more question from the chat from Patrick M., possibly Patrick Mazika himself. Who's like, what's the deal? He also wants to know why Perez over Mazika. He wants to know what happened with relievers at the deadline. Did the potential Contreras deal blow up any chance of getting Robertson? Did the Tigers inexcusably not trading relievers impact the Mets and Andrew Chafin?
We couldn't. I think we got through a full podcast the other day having Andrew Chafin reference, so we couldn't go a full week. So first off, on Philadelphia and Robertson, I think there's a lot of Mets fans who think that the Phillies did not give up anything for Robertson, because I think he was the guy that gave up Ben Brown was like MLB.com's 26th prospect in their system. He was a fast riser this year. He was better than pretty much any Mets pitching prospect outside of maybe Matt Allen. That's not a definite. You know, if the Mets had offered the Cubs Matt Allen for David Robertson, it's not 100% that the Cubs take Allen over Ben Brown. It's more than 50% in my mind. That's, you know, it's not like the Mets were not willing to give up their 26th best prospect for Robertson. So that's why that deal didn't happen from their perspective. They were not willing to give up their best pitching prospect for him. With Detroit, you know, as we mentioned a couple weeks ago, and Cody Stavenhagen, our Tigers writer, has written, this is kind of a trend with them at the trade deadline, that they seem to lean a little too conservative in dealing their own players, especially ones with any kind of team control beyond the season. That, you know, Al Avila, since fired in Detroit, was looking to get value for Chafin that reflected that he could potentially be around next year. Chafin has an opt-out in his deal that he would probably take, you would think. But Avila was kind of peddling him as a guy you'd have for a year and a half, when most teams viewed him as a guy they'd have for 2 months. And so there was kind of a dissonance in terms of what teams were willing to give up and what the Tigers were willing to trade him for. We've seen that before with them, with Michael Fulmer, who they finally dealt this year in his walk year, with Matthew Boyd for so many years, even with Tariq Skubal this year. Like, it seems like these guys from Tigers are quote-unquote available, but they're held up to a certain price point that no one wants to meet. And that's, you know, there's a reason that they're in year 7 of their rebuild, and why they just fired the general manager. So I do not blame them as much on Detroit, as I do on some of the other options that they had available to them at the trade deadline.
Now that we've mentioned Andrew Chafin, we can wrap up. So if you've got questions for our next show, which will be a recorded one, you can email asktedberg@gmail.com or get at us on Twitter. Tim's at Tim Britton. I'm at OG Ted Berg. Tim, until next week, peace out.
Adios.